Welcome to Parenting Special Needs Podcast. Our purposeful conversation today is about 211. 211 is not just a crisis hotline. It's a helpline. Our guests from 211 are Colleen Phillips and Randy Gabriel. They're going to talk with us about the work they do and the services 211 provides. From a helpful listening ear when you don't know where to turn, to an important partner in helping you connect to community resources. Dialing 211 provides individuals and families in need with a shortcut through what typically can be a maze of health and human service agency phone numbers. Please welcome Colleen and Randy. I'm really excited to speak with you all today. I think the holidays are a stressful time, and I want to learn more, and I think our audience would like to know more about 211 and how it helps families.
I wanted to mention, too, the reason this even came about was I had posted something on Facebook where a mother had written a suicide note to her parents, and she was taking care of a child with a wheelchair-bound daughter that was disabled. And I posted it just saying that I think sometimes we all feel certain things, maybe not as dark of a place that she was at, but, you know, how do we get help? And how do we not have it go that far where you end up taking your own life? So I thought, let's reach out and let's find out some more information from you all. So Colleen, if you could please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. That's the first and foremost thing. I really commend you for having such meaningful conversations like this in the community that we really need to have. So my name is Colleen Phillips. I'm the Treasure Coast Community Relations Specialist for 211 Helpline. And a little bit about my background, I am not a clinician myself, but I have worked in the mental health field in various nonprofit organizations since I graduated from college about 4 years ago. So I'm very passionate and very happy to be involved with such a wonderful, meaningful organization making such a difference in our communities.
So thank you. Welcome. And Randy, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Randy Gabriel, and I'm the programs manager for 211 Helpline. I've been with 211 for approximately 5.5, almost 6 years now. I do want to say that I didn't start my professional life in the nonprofit arena. I started out in corporate world, and along the way, met a boy, got married, and had children, and lo and behold, my children had some disabilities, and it brought me to the nonprofit world about 24 years ago. So I come from a different perspective than on a lot of people in nonprofit because I know the need for the programs as a family and a parent.
Okay, well, thank you both for being here and sharing with us. So, but 211 is national, right?
Yeah, 211 is a nationally recognized, easy to remember call-in number, but we can't guarantee that the services we offer locally for our Palm Beach and Treasure Coast residents are going to be what you're going to find in other counties around the United States.
Let's start at the beginning. Explain to me, what is 211?
Sure. So 211 is a community connection agency, and what we do is we're a call center that we help actually really connect people to services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So we're free and we're confidential.
Okay, so give me an example, because I think when speaking with you earlier, I learned something that I wasn't aware of. Like I think maybe as our audience does that 211 is if your suicide hotline, you know, that if you need help for someone or you need help yourself, right? But you guys also direct people to other places and other services, right, as a resource.
Absolutely, we do. So what you're alluding to is our crisis line. We also have a general helpline as well. So when you do call into 211, you have that option to, one, be routed to our suicide crisis line, or to be, you know, obviously not in the crisis helpline part of it too. So we have that available. But yes, as you can imagine, we get the full gamut of different phone calls from people saying, you know, I need food assistance or utility assistance, you know, childcare, tutoring, to some of our other programs like our Sunshine Senior Wellness phone call program, to what Randy will speak to, our Help Me Grow program. So we do, we have quite a wider range of different things besides just our crisis line and the helpline itself. We do.
So people really know that very well. I don't think that's...
Yeah, which is, it's wonderful to have, you know, outlets like this to kind of bring that awareness to, because we do find quite a bit in the community that people only know us for our suicide Prevention Lifeline or our crisis line, but they're not aware that we do have our hands in quite another bit of helping people connect to services, you know, all over the counties that we serve.
Okay, that's great news. Okay, so I think we said kind of what 211 does, but what if you were in a crisis? Because that's kind of where this phone call came from. Mm-hmm. And I have two questions. Okay, my husband had a friend that committed suicide. But prior to that, which this was a couple of years ago, but prior to that, the wife would call my husband asking, like, please, can you do something? And we don't really know that much about anything. I knew of 211. So at one point when things were really tough, I did reach out to 211 and ask, as a friend, like, how do you help? Like, what can you do? And was told pretty much that you can refer the patient, but it's kind of in the patient's hands. So anyways, my thoughts are, like, what do people do, like, if they're in that situation? Like, how do other people help? Like, is there something we should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think, and Randy, feel free to jump in. I certainly think that there is a way the family members and loved ones of someone that's contemplating, suicide can certainly get involved in this. I did take the liberty to kind of look at the American Association of Suicidology website to kind of get some tips on things that, you know, maybe we're not in the throes of the hotline, but to kind of be aware of things to do. Some of the recommendations that they certainly have is having an open conversation with that individual. You know, you want to use a lot of I statements, you know, I love you. I'm seeing a difference in your mood. You never want to put shame on that person. You never want to say you should be doing this, you know, that sort of thing. You definitely want to keep it more focused on you, on I'm seeing a difference in you. You know, it hurts me to see you not so involved in, you know, isolating and in the family. So I think certainly having that conversation and using a lot of I statements is very beneficial. I think also listening to their story, you know, really being honest with them about where they're coming from, what they're experiencing, I think is really kind of gives power into your court to really have an understanding of where they're coming from on this. I also think it's so super important to let them know that you care about them, that you're here for them. They're not alone in these feelings and in the struggle. You know, a lot of times people that struggle with depression and that isolation, they feel like they're the only ones. You know, they're alone in this. They're worthless or helpless. There's nothing available to them, which is obviously very not the case. There's a lot of resources available, a lot of things that you can do to be proactive in trying to get people the help they need. So I think reassuring them that you're there for them, that you care for them, that you can get through this together is certainly, something that you want to establish with them. You definitely want to have that conversation of if they are thinking of suicide, if they have a plan in place, you know, if they're really looking to really do this, then we really need to talk to a mental health professional. You really need to connect them, call 211. We can certainly assist in doing that, but you want to connect them to all a certified professional, you know, to deal with some of the issues that they're experiencing. And certainly 211 can help if it's a lot of, you know, different things that they need, whether it's a job or maybe, you know, something is conspiring to them wanting to commit suicide. We can certainly try to, you know, help them in that aspect as well as getting them connected to services. You definitely want to stay away from debating things of life, you know, minimizing problems that they have. Stay away from that kind of thing. You definitely want to hear them out and really just kind of meet them where they're at, you know. I know that was kind of a lot in that, but definitely reassuring that you're there for them and, you know, helping them navigate to get connected to services and help would be the most appropriate, I think.
All right. Well, thank you. No, I think that's great. And I think that's similar to like that movie we also saw too, right? Was it like they need to be, you need to hear them. Just like sometimes they just need to sit and be able to share with others.
They need that platform to be able to let that, whatever they're experiencing, out in a non-judgmental environment, which is why here at 211, we are a friendly conversational voice that a lot of times we will get people that call in that feel worthless, that feel helpless, that feel they have nowhere else to turn, and you can turn to us. You can turn to us and, you know, people will call in to not even seek services. They just want someone to hear them. And that's so important. You know, we live in this culture that, you know, people are, you know, grinding their wheels and staying in their own lane and, you know, doing this thing and not having that sense of community. So I think that is so important that with people that struggle with, you know, suicidal thoughts or depression, anxiety, you know, these are things that we all kind of have been touched by in some aspect. And to knowing that there's a community and people out there to help, I think is so important.
Right. And I you know, I really think that it really needs to get out there too, because I, like I said, I wasn't aware that you guys will connect people to other places.
Absolutely.
So that's huge too. And I, even with the special needs community, right? I mean, I think some of the stuff on the back of your brochure, I was like, wow, that's fantastic that that's available. I don't know, Randy, if you want to speak on that or what the Help Me Grow program is.
I can speak on that. And I do want to also mention that even although it's just in Palm Beach County, in Palm Beach County, we do have a special needs helpline.
You do?
Which serves, yes. How exciting is that?
That's very exciting.
We have a navigator that works with families of children 0 to 22 that have disabilities, and she can help them navigate the maze of services, help them get connected to Agency for Persons with Disabilities. We've helped with crisis situations and getting people connected to the Med Waiver in a crisis situation, getting them referrals to other agencies, getting them connected to someone at the school district if they're having difficulties with services through the school district. And although that's only in Palm Beach County, she does serve approximately 450 families a year through this program. It's one of my favorites. It's near and dear to my heart. And our other program, our Help Me Grow, is actually a national initiative. It started in Connecticut and throughout the United States in, I want to say 27 states, but I'm really not sure on the exact number. But Florida became one of the affiliate states for the national organization. And we became one of the affiliates in Florida about 4 years ago. And what Help Me Grow does is promote early identification of developmental, behavioral, and educational concerns. So as parents of children with disabilities, we all know how important that early identification piece is. You know, the earlier the better, the earlier we get that intervention, the better it is. And so what we do is we perform developmental and behavioral screenings for families. They can do that online, they can do that via mail, or we can do it with them over the phone. If the child has concerns or the family needs information and resources and materials, we provide that. We provide referrals with follow-up and care coordination. So this is what really sets Help Me Grow apart from other programs. Instead of doing the screening, assessing the results and providing resources to the families, our care coordinators stay with that family. We give the referrals one of three ways. We do a warm transfer into where we're on the phone with the family, and we can transfer that family to that agency with us on the phone on a three-way call. With the family's permission, we can make a direct referral to that agency for the family, or a lot of times the family says, I want to do it myself, I'm good with it, and off they go. But that isn't the end of it. We follow up after that. We want to make sure that family, once they're connected to the agency, is getting the services and are having their needs met. So just because they've made that phone call or they have that appointment doesn't mean that that child is going to get services. We want to make sure they know how important it is to follow up with those services, how important it is to go for the follow-up evaluations. So we really stay with them until the end, until they're connected to a community service. If they need other help with other community programs, we help them with that. We really, though, it's that care coordination piece that's really so much different than what other agencies do, and the fact that we stay with that family and we follow up with that family and make sure they're connected and have what they need and that their child has all the opportunities possible. And most of the time our referrals are to the Birth to Three program or Child Find the 3 to 5 program in all of our counties. Approximately, I believe there's 29 counties right now in Florida covered by Help Me Grow. And growing, you know, every year that we can get more money through the state budget and the legislation, we can grow our program. And, you know, we're saving the state money because the earlier we get these kids in programs, the earlier we can get them services, the better it is for the family, for the child, you know, my kids are doing great because of early intervention.
Yeah, that's key.
So I have a question on that, though. So how long do you say you follow through? Like, so give me an example of that. So like, okay, I call you, my child needs help. Maybe I have a young child and we're going to get, you know, evaluations, or you know that they're going to need early steps, etc. So you connect me.
Mm-hmm.
Then
so this is what we do. We make the referral to early steps or the child find directly if we do the screening.
Okay.
For the family. So we do the direct referral. We follow up to the family to make sure that they've connected, that the whether child find or early steps has called them. If they have the appointment, they know the date and they know why it's so important to go to this. In our case notes, we make note of when their evaluation or their appointment is. We follow up with the family after their appointment to make sure they went, make sure they understand everything that happened there and what the outcome was. And hopefully the child doesn't, you know, our greatest hope is the child doesn't qualify for services. That's always good news. But right. Maybe they need some other resources. Maybe they need some other assistance in other areas, or maybe they just need a playgroup. You know, maybe the child needs some more socialization, whatever it may be, we follow up with that family. So even after we follow up after the evaluation to see where the results are. Once they have the results and we connect that family, and if they're going to get services, then our job is done. We know that we've connected them to the service that they need. Sometimes it might be 3 or 4 months. Let's say they do a screening and the child is 9 months old and we complete the screening and there are no concerns. The child looks totally age appropriate. We always offer a follow-up screening in 6 months. Mm-hmm. Because a child that looks good and has no concerns at 9, 12, 18 months, in 6 months may show a totally different outcome, as we know that children develop differently. So we always offer that follow-up screening until they're 5.5 years old. My care coordinators have children, they've been screening for 3 years, for as long as our program has been in existence. Wow. And every 6 months they call that family and they set up a screening for that child. And because anything can affect the development of a child. It can be an outside environmental problem, it can be stress in the home, or it can be developmental. So we want to make sure that until that child is in school, we're following that child and giving that family the support that they need, mm-hmm. in their child's development.
Wow, that's fantastic. And I have one question on that, just because I'm curious, regarding when you tell the parents, because I'm going back to my own, I wish you guys were around when my daughter was, when I was having issues with my daughter. And I'm thinking back to the fact when, you know, I went in for the, you know, testing, and being young, never having a child with different abilities, you know, they just said, well, she's developmentally delayed. And I didn't know what that meant. So to me, that just meant if I worked really hard, she would catch up, you know, but it wasn't like, so when you guys go and talk to families, you explain about the importance of early intervention.
Intervention. Mm-hmm.
And really tell them like why it's so important. Like, so someone that's been there knows, like, who is the person that talks to the parents?
My care coordinators come from various backgrounds. So some are mastered level social workers. Some are social workers that have been in the children's mental health. Some have been in child development. So they come from various backgrounds. So it's not like a parent support program, but they're professionals and they know how to speak to parents. We're not here to diagnose the child. So we're very careful that we don't go into the diagnosis phase of that, you know, and we explain to them that this is a developmental screening and all kids develop at different stages. And, you know, and it's very true that some children may have concerns and they may go into early intervention, and 2 years from now they may be age appropriate and never have any more problems, you know, right. you know, mm-hmm. delays in their life. And others it may be there may be underlying issues. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing we tell them is that the earlier you get your child the services, the better.
Right.
And, you know, and go from there. We will follow the family and give them support, even if the child is diagnosed with a disability. In our Help Me Grow program in our four northern counties, which is Martin, St. Lucie, Indian River, and Okeechobee. And in Palm Beach County, if their child is eventually diagnosed with a disability, we refer them to our special needs helpline, and our special needs navigator can assist them with all the services that they may need in their future for their child.
Wow. That's awesome. We need those everywhere.
No, we do. Certainly do.
How do we get that everywhere?
I know, right. We definitely do.
I really would love to have the special needs helpline everywhere. Like I said, you know, I don't think people realize the number of children in our communities that have developmental disabilities. You know, even when you look at the data from the school districts, 15% of students are deemed students with disabilities. And that doesn't include your students, a lot of your students with ADHD and other diagnoses that fall under their 504 categories.
Wow. Well, it's interesting. I really think I'm glad that we're doing this because I didn't realize how much 211 does. You know, I mean, I think that's interesting. So let me ask another question too, because this might not be 211. When would you call 211? Okay, so if I need help, we understood the suicide hotline, perhaps, you know, a bit of that. And I want to get back to that in a second too, but regarding, I could call you and you kind of would direct me or you would refer me to almost anywhere, right? I mean, based
on. Absolutely. We have over 1600 agencies in our database. So we can certainly, try to connect you as much as we can to anything we have currently. And we work very collaboratively with other like-minded organizations in our communities. So certainly, I mean, you can pick up the phone again if you just want to talk to someone. Maybe you've had a fight with a spouse. Maybe you just want to let some venting out and talk to someone. You don't even have to be seeking services mm-hmm. to speak with one of our representatives. So we are there, you know, for you whenever you want to be connected to, you know, an agency or if you just want to talk. So I would encourage anyone, if you ever find yourself in a difficult time in your lives, or if you ever in a situation that you don't know how to navigate, certainly pick up the phone, call, text us. We have a really wonderful, robust website, which is 211treasurecoast.org. Or if you're in Palm Beach County, 211palmbeach.org. You can certainly reach us 24 hours a day and we can certainly try to connect you. So I would encourage individuals and families, you know, pick up the phone at any point. You don't have to be in crisis to call. You can certainly just vent to us and let us know of your struggles and we will try to assist you the best way we can.
And I think what your tagline says up there, call, you know, 211 help starts here. And I think, yeah, people need to really understand that more, that it's, you'll help. So let me make sure I'm clear too. I'm just thinking of situations that I've dealt with where I think it's crisis situations and it's like, okay, you didn't know where to refer somebody. But like I've had friends that have had to Baker Act their children, which that is a crisis. I mean, all of a sudden you haven't had a problem and now you have a problem.
Right.
So is that something where, I mean, and honestly, I wouldn't think to call 211, but is that something I could refer now people to say, hey, at least ask for suggestions because they're at a loss too. I know they're working with mental health, but now but it's still pretty overwhelming, especially if they're just in the hospital at the first stage, whatever, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we want to be known as that gatekeeper in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, it's overwhelming to be in these situations where you don't know where to turn and where to go to and who to reach out to. So reach out to us and we can certainly connect you. You know, the caveat to that is if you're truly in a medical emergency, you need to dial 911. You know, I don't think that needs to be understated. You know, if you're truly in a medical emergency, you need to seek help. You know, whether that is, you know, we're talking about suicide today in our Help Me Grow program, but if you're truly at that place, you need to walk into an ER, you know, let's not understate that, but certainly you need to have 211 involved and we can assist anyway. We do get calls, you know, very oftentimes on our lifeline of people that are in the community, you know, about to do the method of what they're thinking of committing suicide with. And certainly, you know, we're there to speak to them and talk to them too, but yeah, you know, you can certainly reach us out in crisis, but I do believe in a true medical emergency if, you know, reach out to the, you know, 911, certainly. I don't want to understate that, but you definitely need to reach out to 211 as well.
Someone said to me once,
if it's not 911, it's 211.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Well, and I think that's important, because I don't think that I necessarily knew that until speaking with you all now. Like I said, when I met you at that conference recently, I was surprised of all the other services you guys offered.
Absolutely.
So, and I'm kind of, I feel like more out and about, and I get to know a lot of things, you know, a lot of things that are around. So that's why I thought it was interesting, and I want to be able to share with other families, because it happens, and it's happening more and more, you know, with, you know, not just suicide, although that has been more in the forefront lately with different people, you know, stars committing suicide and et cetera. So let's go back to that for 1 second. I want to ask a question, and I'm not sure if either one of you can answer, but if you can, I'd appreciate it. So,
sure.
But I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, when we were at that conference, that back to that meeting, that kind of this is where I got it from, where the gentleman kind of said, you know, mental health is here and mental illness is at the far end of the spectrum. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And I had never really thought of that before, because I always just think mental illness. I never think that it's a stage almost that you could,
or the continuum.
It is continuum. It never dawned on me that it's a continuum. I just kind of think, oh, that's for people that are really have issues. You know, I didn't really ever think that it's a it's a continuum that it could get there. So am I right in that thinking that that is, like, we all have to keep good mental health?
So I think when you look at mental health, you can obviously have positive mental health, you know, negative. I think we're kind of looking at very polarizing. I think, you know, like we alluded, it's a continuum. You know, I think when we start looking at mental illness is when I start thinking of, like, the diagnosis starts to come to mind, that it's a medical diagnosis of having a mental illness. But I do feel it's a continuum. And I think that all people are on that spectrum, if you will, at certain places. So I think it's certainly, you know, when we think of mental health, it's not a negative feeling, you know, it's not a negative aspect to it. We need to think of it as more of a range and a positive, you know, type of aptitude, if you will. But I certainly think it is. Yeah, like what we saw at that community event is more of a continuum basis.
Right. Yeah. And just like good physical health, good mental health is important as well, just as is important.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that mental health should be treated the same as physical health. You know, if you break your leg, you're going to go to the hospital and get it fixed. And I think we have so much stigma attached to people that struggle with mental illness and mental health issues, and they feel very stigmatized. And again, goes into that isolation. I think we need to change that conversation, which is why we're, you know, doing things like this today and bringing awareness to this. We're all touched by this on some aspect, you know, aside from talking about, you know, suicide and very serious mental issues and things, we're all touched by this. You know, how many people in the community have not felt depressed at some point in their life, right? That they haven't felt isolated or felt worthless. You know, these are things that we all can kind of really come together and talk about. And I think that's important. But to answer your question and not get on a tangent, yes, I do feel that it is more of a continuum, and we need to have more positive conversations about mental health in this community. Right. Absolutely.
And especially now, beginning the holidays, I know that's a big thing. So are there any tips that you guys can recommend to kind of help people be in a better spot during the holidays?
Yeah, I mean, I can, and Randy, feel free to jump in. I feel like the holidays are a very joyous time. You know, we're with our families. It is a very wonderful time of the year, but I think that there's a lot of overshadow to people that truly struggle this time of year. And I think that for the people that do struggle being around families that may be toxic or maybe have feelings of, you know, wanting to commit suicide and these type of things, just I want people to know that 211 is available for them. We're available in the holidays. We're available in the middle of the night. So just please know that there are resources available to you. The other thing that may kind of segue into this is, you know, I do kind of want to let people know of some warning signs. You know, maybe if you're thinking of a family member around the holidays that you're noticing is kind of showing some isolation or some behavior or changes in mood, you know, just kind of what to be identified for and what to look for, if you will. So, you know, while you're around that family table for your Christmas dinner, and, you know, we just had Thanksgiving, but, you know, as you can kind of see your family members in different light, you kind of want to have some of these warning signs, if you will. You know, if a person is talking about ending their life or they're talking about committed suicide, you know, those should be really big red flags to you. You also want to think, you know, if they're talking about being a burden to themselves and for other people in the family, these are, again, things that are red flags that you need to be aware of. They're talking about feeling trapped, maybe unbearable pain that they're experiencing. These are, again, things that they're alluding to that they possibly may be thinking of wanting to end their life. You also want to look about behavioral things. So you're looking at increased possibly drug use or alcohol use. You're looking for things like self-harm. those are obviously very common tendencies that you will see with someone that may be wanting to end their life or having thoughts of that, you know, looking for a way out, feeling very isolated, not wanting to be around family and friends. You know, they're not visiting, calling. They're also feeling very agitated easily, or fatigued is also a big one. And then obviously you have the mood changes. So signs of depression, anxiety, loss of interest, you know, with family members and things that they once loved at certain times in their life, very irritable, very agitated. And then you also want to look for things that they maybe have a previous diagnosis. So we are seeing prevalence of people that have diagnosis of mental illnesses like depression, substance abuse, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, you know, anxiety disorders. We also want to be aware that this population can be very susceptible to this. And then the last thing I would kind of want to touch on is, you know, if they've had previous attempts. So you want to look at historical things that you're seeing with certain family members. You know, if they've had previous attempts, those should be really big red flags to you that something is not, you know, connecting here. We need to get this person, you know, professional help.
And is that what we, like, what do you do? Like when people are, like, if it's not in your family, or if you're a friend, or just like what you just said, if you are seeing those warning signs, what do family members do?
I think it kind of goes back to what I alluded when we first started talking. You know, again, you want to have that really open conversation with them. Again, using the I statements. I'm noticing that you're not wanting to talk to mom and dad anymore. I notice, you know, I'm seeing, and it hurts me to see you in so much pain all the time. Again, using those I statements, not putting the, you know, you should go to the hospital, you should do that. Those are things that you want to stay away from. Keep the focus more on you, but allow that individual to have the platform to have that conversation, to say what they're experiencing and why. You're going to learn more from that than you are going to be kind of talking down to that person, because the shoulds and the woulds of the world, those aren't going to really work for someone that's truly in crisis. And you know, again, you want to get a professional specialist involved. So a therapist of some sort, a psychotherapist, you know, if it's a medication, you know, that can, if for depression or things like that, you obviously want to have a medical professional involved in this as well. And certainly 211, you know, can be that gatekeeper to help you get, you know, some of the agency information and get you connected however we can. But again, I think to answer your question, just kind of what I alluded earlier to, you know, you want to listen to them, make sure that they know that you're there for them, you know, and there may be some things that they may be feeling depressed because they recently just lost their job and they can't, you know, feed their families at night. Okay, well then call 211. We can certainly connect you to find these agencies to help you find that job. We can connect you to different agencies that will provide food assistance. So that's one of the things that we do here at 211 is we look at the big picture of what's going on with the families and the individuals that call into us. So, you know, it's not, you know, we'll just give you the phone number and send you on your way. We really try to understand where you're coming from and really getting all your needs met on that front, if you will. So, and there's a lot of other social experiences and things that allude to people that feel that they're in this place, and we try to give all the benefits in getting that person connected.
Well, no, I think it's fantastic. I'm so glad that we talked and shared about this. I have one other little question just that I want to ask, because I realized as you guys were saying this, so what if you're the friend that's hearing it from the person? Could I call you? Like, if I'm the friend that's listening to another friend on the phone tell me different things, should I just, like you're saying, I ask those questions, but also is it just listen to let them vent whatever they're saying? Would I call 211 as the friend and say, how do I help? I mean, how, like, what if you're just like a, I'm honestly thinking of my husband. He has several friends that have issues, and I know I hope he can't, you know, this is not good, but he is a sounding board, and he's not a professional. And it's like, sometimes I'm like, after I saw that movie, The Angst, I told him, you just need to listen, you know, but that doesn't mean I know what I'm talking about. So.
Absolutely. And I don't think that anyone that is not a medical professional should be throwing out diagnosis or throwing out anything like that, because, you know, you kind of really need to stay in your lane and let the professionals do what they do. Right. But I certainly think, you know, to answer your question, you know, as being that soundboard, that's kind of your purpose. You're there to listen to them. You're there to meet them where they're at, wherever they are, you know, on that spectrum. But then also you're going to be there to really validate them is so important, but then also to give them the resources to say, hey, you are not alone in this. I have felt, you know, this way, or I have known someone to feel this way. I have, you know, felt depressed or anxious or different things in my life. And you know what? We can reach out to 211. Did you know that 211 is available to help you? And, you know, they're a fabulous organization, non-for-profit, that they're going to be able to help you out with this. And I think it's kind of navigating that conversation of one, I would not start it as, you know, telling the would and shoulds of the world, you know, right. You should call 211. I would do this if I were you.
Right.
It's more allowing them to let off some of the struggles that they're currently going through, to have that platform to speak it. But then you also need to be there as a friend, as a loved one, to say, you know, you're not alone with this. Let's get you connected to people that can serve you and that can help you talk about this, you know, in a more intimate environment, if you will, again, connecting to medical mm-hmm. health professionals and things that maybe they couldn't, you know, be so divulging with as a loved one. You know, I think that is so important.
Right. No, I think it is too. Well, I can't thank you guys enough for sharing and educating me and our audience on what all of the things that 211 does, because I didn't know everything. So I'm thrilled to know,
yeah, we're so thankful to have this platform to speak to your viewers on this. And, you know, one thing that I did want to kind of say is how we are not alone in this. You know, suicide is very prevalent in our society. We know that at the crisis line, you know, over the summer with, you know, the celebrities and the different things, we know very well how prevalent suicidal ideation and thinking of suicide and contemplating in your life is. It's a very serious matter and should never be taken lightly. If someone does speak that they want to do this, you know, never take it as a joke, never take it, you know, something to sweep under the rug. You know, we always want to seek, you know, agencies and medical health professionals that are going to help. I also wanted to last night pulled some statistics that I thought were very interesting. If you're willing to indulge me, I'd love to kind of say
yes,
them. So suicide, which I did not know, is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. Mm-hmm. The 10th leading cause of death. So we have so many people that live in this country that are battling and struggling with this on a day-to-day basis. The other thing is that we have nearly each year 45,000 individuals die by suicide.
Wow.
So we have potentially almost 50,000 people each year in our country that are dying needlessly, not knowing what's available to them.
Wow.
And then I did find this very interesting. Men actually are 3.5 times more likely to die by suicide than women, which I found that very interesting when I came across that. And then most staggeringly, on average, there are 123 suicides per day.
Oh my gosh, wow.
123 suicides per day that we're seeing in this country. So this is a very serious topic. You know, these are almost epidemic proportions. You know, mental health in this country, I think we can all agree, is something that we need to understand, that mental health is as important as physical health. But I just want, you know, people that are listening to this podcast to know that there's help available. You don't have to be a statistic. You don't have to be on this piece of paper that I'm looking at right now, reading from. There's help available, and 211 is definitely the catalyst to try to assist you in wherever you are, in what stage of life.
Oh, and when you say that 123 suicides a day, that doesn't include attempted suicides.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sure.
You know, so suicide does not discriminate by age, race, gender, socioeconomic status, or lifestyle. So this means that no one's immune to it. It can affect all of us. It can affect people of all ages, all ethnic groups, everything. So it's a very serious topic. It should never be taken lightly.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I can't thank you both enough for taking the time to speak with us and share with us and helping to educate us on this very important topic.
Thank you. It could impact all of us
and does impact all of us.
It does. Yeah. So. Thank you so much for having us. We really, really appreciate your time and reaching out to us to speak.
Giving us this opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
I'm Shantae, and you've been listening to Parenting Special Needs Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you haven't done so yet, please go to Apple Podcast and subscribe, then rate and review this podcast. Thank you for listening. And I'll talk to you soon.